wife's still crying her eyes out in the taxi now because we're having to go back to Sunderland and wait even more. Got back to the hotel all night. Roy Keane was the manager at the time. Roy, I never even met Roy. Roy was back in Ireland doing his badges, so he never even come over. And then he phoned me later on in the evening, and he just said, "Look, unfortunately, Paul, we're not going to go ahead with the signing of you." And I was like, "Can you please explain to me why?" Well, my physio's basically told me that you've got a knee problem and your knee's going to explode in 2 years. So, like, from a insurance wise, we can't insure you. She knows what she's doing. She's a hairdresser. So I'm thinking, oh, she's brilliant. We're both going to have blonde hair in the morning. Mine was ginger. So I had to go into Solihull.
I remember, yeah.
So I had to go into Solihull the next day with my wife wearing
a
cap.
Bit of a ginger tinge, yeah?
Yeah. We had to go and get another colour that would make my hair go white. Wow.
Sitting in the salon as I'm walking,
so obviously I'm not doing it in a salon. My wife's doing it, Caroline. So we've ended up going in Solihull, and I bumped into Dean Kiley, and I'm thinking, he's gone, take your cap off, you idiot, like that. And I'm like, no, Dean, I can't do it in here, mate. No, I'm not doing it. And he was like, what are you doing? I said, you want to see Kev's hair, mate? So the characters in the staff now had gone to that next level of, like, we can't be below standards now because we know what's coming. And Brian expected the Man United standards, and that's what he brought like players like Kevin Campbell in, who understood the Premier League, and he was a great leader wherever he went. Steve Watson was another great character, so he came in. Obviously the young lads like Richard Chaplow, Kieran Richardson, they all added to the quality of the squad, and I just had to deal with it face on. It's like, it's football, these things happen, and there was no maliciousness to Damien whatsoever. And yeah, down the line, like, obviously where I've seen him coaching at Blackburn, and we've like you say, we've had a good chat and we've talked about the good old times. It's football, yeah. And he was the same player. He was a winner. He wanted to get stuck in, and it was just one of those unfortunate things on the football pitch.
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hello, Paul.
Absolute legend. Yeah.
How are you today?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, enjoying the rest of the madness of the seasons, like you say. So, it's time to switch off with the family and just enjoy that time.
So we were just saying, obviously, the end of your season, you've pulled off a great escape again.
Yeah, great escape. I like them. I like them. Yeah, they sound good on your CV, don't they? But you don't want to go into them all the time. So yeah, Oxford City was a real good challenge for me. Went in Christmas time. Obviously, the club was in a little bit of a pickle, and they wanted to obviously me my experiences of what I've experienced in the past, not only as a player but as a coach as well. It was great. It was a great ending. Mathematically, going into the last game, obviously, in our heads, we knew we were safe, but it wasn't announced that we were safe. So, yeah, we knew we had to go into the last game still away at Darlington and to make sure we got the result, and we did. We won 3-1, and it was a real good performance by the lads, and it puts the icing on the cake, really, with all the hard work after Christmas.
Yeah, it sounds like a horrible place as well. Away to Darlington to get a result. Is it just bad?
Yeah. It's a long drive back.
It's a long drive back if you don't get a result, and all the other results go against you. Yeah, it's... But no, the coach journey was a nice, bubbly coach journey, and it was again, probably not as emotional as what I've had to deal with at previous clubs, where there's a lot more added pressure with the stakes, obviously, at Blues and at West Brom in the Premier League, them escapes. Yeah, so it didn't feel that sort of intense pressure, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was a more of a, thank God for that. That's done now. We can switch off and enjoy ourselves on the coach on the way back.
Yeah, a little bit different from this financial catastrophe here if we go down.
And people obviously in the background that you see on a daily basis losing their jobs. It's not nice to see good people that don't get the recognition that they deserve. And yeah, when obviously situations like that happen, especially like you say with Blues and the unknown really with the owners and the way the club was a mess, just of how many people would lose their jobs and not be in work. Yeah, it was something that you couldn't imagine thinking about.
It's a huge knock-on effect, isn't it, that fans particularly don't see. You as players see it every day, the tea lady, the kit man, and you're thinking, we need to get this. You're obviously thinking, we need to get the result to stay up, but you're thinking, again, these need to work. It's their livelihood, isn't it?
Definitely. And the camaraderie you have behind the scenes with them people as well, it's like, they make your jobs easier when you come in because everything's laid out for you, everything's clean for you. So it's a mutual respect of, like, we respect you because you respect us. So, yeah, it's not nice. It's not nice when you see obviously staff members losing their jobs because of them reasons. So yeah, we're, like you say, it's a football, sometimes it's impossible to survive, but financially from a club, if they can secure the people that work at the ground, then it makes it easier. But obviously Blues at the time.
I was going to say, this is the kit lady and the tea guy, and I was the same person running back then.
Yeah, I mean, when I was I'm getting to the end of my month. I didn't win another month here. And that's the way it was. It was like, you just never knew. You never knew what was going to happen. It was, it was scary. It was a scary moment.
So just to, just a little layer then. So over 700 professional appearances across your whole career. Looking at the numbers last night, over 250 for Watford, over 230 for West Brom, over 180 for Blues from that month-long contract to 180 games and club captain, team captain, player of the year that second season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what does, where did it begin for you as a footballer?
So I came through Watford's academy. Yeah, so I was a young lad growing up in Watford. Obviously played my grassroots football with a club called SNK United, which was brilliant. Having fun with your mates on a Saturday and Sunday was always great fun growing up. And then, yeah, I got scouted for Watford at the age of 9, but it was only 2 times a week. So it was a Monday and a Friday, and they were both in the gym. They weren't on like grass pitches or Astro. It was like a YMCA gym. So again, that was good because you would go in there and train with like the older kids as well. So you'd be bouncing off the walls, you'd be getting beaten up, you'd be getting kicked, and you pitch yourself up at that age. Yeah. It was just a bit of fun for you. So yeah, so then it progressed from there, really. I was still allowed to play grassroots football until I signed my YTS. Which you're not allowed to do which is, yeah,
the rules.
When you think of the rules now, it's madness. And I also think of the pathway for young kids coming through the system, and it's non-existent for some clubs, and it's actually quite scary. Of we actually need to have a look at it. Do we need to go back to the old way of understanding that this is the upbringing, this is the life skills that some of these kids need to understand, and it's not all nicey-nicey and you get this, you get that. And then all of a sudden you get to you're 21s now and you're being told that you're not getting a pro, or you're 18s. You've been through that system for so long.
Yeah.
And you're then told that you're not going to get a contract. Your world's ending. Like, as a footballer now, your world is ending because you've not had that sort of upbringing of I was mentored by a senior pro at Watford Football Club. So for me, it was like, it was brilliant. I loved it. And it made me the person I was.
You just made me think about that, actually. And so if they get to 21 then, so most of our adult life, or well, growing up really, have been friends from school, football, and work mainly.
Yeah.
So you're taking out that football aspect from this kid who's signed at 9 and hasn't played football with their mates. For 10 plus years.
Yeah.
They're going to feel the isolation of that a little bit, I feel, as well, that they haven't played with their mates. Yeah. They've lost that childhood, haven't they?
But more pressure, really, I would say, is put on these kids now because they're in the system. It's like, I've got to make it.
Yeah.
I have to make it. So it's like, right, okay, but your childhood, you've lost a little bit of, because like you say there, you've not had that opportunity to play with your mates still at the weekends. It's everything's dedicated to playing for a professional football club. But that moment's taken away from you in a split second when you're told you're not good enough. So then for a kid to have to go through that system and have that like sort of pushing, I wouldn't say the parent, well, parents, like you say, parents do become a bit of a problem because they're the ones that also want to be the player. Whereas be that supportive parent and guide them the right way. My kids, I want my kids to go through the non-league system because it's better. That's like, when I was growing up, it was more the non-league reserve team football, also academy feel, but also grassroots with my mates, but playing against men. Yeah. I played against men as well before I made my first team debut with Watford at 17. So altogether, I felt I was complete as a person and as a child because I got to experience the best of both worlds with it.
That's something that does come up a lot in these podcasts, isn't it?
Well, to be fair, yeah. All the great Blues players we've had in have all had that pathway.
Yeah. But I'm not saying it's not wrong.
Yeah.
We've got to find a way.
It's rounded you before you've got there, hasn't it?
Some kind of middle ground.
How many players do we see coming through Birmingham's academy into the first team at this moment in time?
Well, it's a big thing now, isn't it, this season, that there's none?
Watford, for me, I came through the system under Graham Taylor and there was 9 of us. There was 9 youth team players that got like pro contract at Watford, but you played for the first team.
Yeah.
None of them now. There's none at Watford, and it breaks my heart because I went back as a coach and it was, I could see it. The negativity towards the academy, the distance of, they never ate with you as well. They had their own building, so you never even saw them. And for me, it was like, wow, this is this can't be happening in football. It needs to change. And it might not happen at all the other clubs. But I would say that there is that divide.
Yeah.
There is that divide where a first team player doesn't get to spend time with an academy player, or have that where I would clean Andy Hessenthaler's boots. And for me, it was like, that was my upbringing, because if I made a mistake on Andy Hessenthaler's boots, I knew what was coming. Yeah. But it wasn't like an aggressive, it was of, right, there's your punishment, Robbo. This is what you're going to get for making a mistake.
Yeah, you've got responsibility, like, haven't you?
Yeah, you're made accountable for making a mistake on Andy Hessenthaler's football boots. And that, again, it was brilliant for me.
Yeah, well, responsibility, accountability. And
yeah.
We've said it numerous times throughout the season. It's not just this season, but when you go for a bad spell, throw the kids in who are hungry for it, do you know what I mean? And a lot of managers will go default to, we need to sign someone, where look downwards instead of kind of signing someone who's maybe not as good as someone coming through, just give them a little bit of a chance. And
I think we're there. It was Ramal Donovan was the last kind of kid that come through, wasn't it? And he's at Brentford now.
Yeah. Ramal, again, was a talented player when I was here.
Yeah.
But he had different problems off the field where he was late and things like that. Now, as a kid, like, you can't be doing that. You've got to be respectful and you've got to do your job properly. Now he's a top player because he's in Brentford. So he's had to realise that to change. Maybe was it he needed to get away from Birmingham as well. When you look at it, I needed to get away from Watford to sort of change the way that I was with when hanging around. I drank a lot when I was younger. I'm not afraid to say that. Wasn't proud of it. Didn't make me big. It made me feel good. But I knew if I carried on that, then I wouldn't go to the levels that I needed to get to.
So was that kind of breaking through?
Yeah, breaking through.
Feeling yourself.
Yeah, breaking through. It was the pressure. My pressure was I need to go. I hang around without elder men.
Yeah.
So again, my brother and his mates and my cousins, and that would always look after me. But I felt like that was my outlet. The pressures of getting away from like the football side of it now, where I was involved with the first team, I needed a drink. Whereas it's a lot different now with the kids. It's like the social media, they're going out late and like different things. They got good things, they're different.
Yeah.
Again, but distractions away from what it could be like to be a top footballer.
Of course.
Whereas then obviously administration was kicking in with Watford, and then the opportunity for me to go to West Brom was a lease of life that I knew that I needed to go and away from where I was brought up.
Yeah. You definitely didn't need to worry about the glitzy nightlife of West Bromwich Town Centre.
No, I didn't. I did a few times when we got promoted and the celebrations and that. Yeah, it was good. We enjoyed them nights. But yeah, it was, I stayed over the nice side where I was by the M40 closer to home.
Yeah.
To get back and see family.
So you got spotted at nine then. Was you a big lad? What were your attributes? Were you always a defender?
No, I was a striker when I was growing up. Yeah, I played up front for S&K. I would play up front or wide left. That were my natural positions for the county. Then when I was getting picked for the county, I was a left winger. And it was Kenny Jackett, really. So Kenny Jackett was, obviously, he came through Watford as well. He was my youth team manager at the time. And he believed that he could transform me into a left back like Kenny. Obviously, I liked getting forward as well. So that role would become norm for me. But then obviously it was just understanding your defensive duties with being compact and switching on. So it took me a while to get used to it, but then I grew into it. And 15 years on, you play that position and it becomes the norm.
Do you ever regret that?
No, not at all. No, I loved learning sort of like, obviously as a striker, I loved scoring goals and being in good positions. I played in good teams, in my grassroots teams, it was good teams. You always got good service. You knew where you were going to be. Right, just put it in the goal. Then your left wing, obviously I was quick, I was direct. I was quite a lightweight child, so I knew the physicality side of it. If I come up against the bigger one, I had to be smarter. So I learned that side of the game as well. But then obviously the defending side of it, and you're coming up against men, you've got to be a little bit more robust. You've got to be physical. You've also got to defend the back post, knowing that wingers are coming behind you. Yeah. And then when you play against top quality players in the Championship and the League One at the time, it was, the wingers there are totally different. They're quick, they're powerful, they're aggressive. So yeah, your game's got to develop and change differently.
Yeah.
So West Brom then. So the season you went there, was that the season?
2003, 2004. Yeah, we got promoted. Yeah.
That was a promotion season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What do you recall of that?
It was. When I first went in there, obviously I knew I was competing against a player like Neil Clement. The squad was brilliant. Yeah, it was a great,
wasn't it?
Yeah, real top quality player Clem was. So I knew, but that's the challenge in football. You've got to go into these clubs and you've got to compete against these players. And yeah, I had no problem with that. And we had a real good bond. There was a good togetherness. It was a bit like Watford. It was a family club. It was a well-run club. And yeah, you knew that when you were going to play, you had to compete against players like Neil. So yeah, I got my opportunity against Norwich at home. That was my debut, and we won the game 1-0. And it was a real, for me, it was just a solid performance. I knew what I needed to do. Yeah, and obviously, you know what you got to do to keep the shirt. That's the way football is. Yeah, you got to play your own game. You got to do well for the team. And yeah, it was a real good game for me to go in and be involved in. And it just went from strength to strength. Yes, there was games where me and Neil would change, because Gary Megson liked a wing back position as well. So I would play left wing back. Sometimes Clem would play left side centre half. So we would mix it and chop and change of it. But yeah, it was a real good year for us that year, going back up to the Premier League. And we had a good squad. Obviously then Gary would start to change that squad a little bit more, because of now the Premier League was getting to that stage where the foreign imports are coming in and every squad was getting stronger with that. So yeah, he felt we needed to add a little bit more quality to survive in the Premier League.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause to be fair, I'd seen your Blues TV interview before, and it was the best player you played against.
Yeah.
And it was like Ronaldo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay then.
I mean, there's loads. I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to play against the best. My generation, they were the best, and they were
Premier League. So
they were the best out and out wingers that you would come up against.
Yeah.
It's like when I watch football now, it's like I look at the fullbacks against the wingers, and it's like
coming back in. They don't always like fullbacks come back,
and that's the norm with football now. It's like a winger likes beating someone, coming back. Oh, I want to beat you again. Then the defender wins the ball, and it's like, well, it didn't quite work.
Come back in, invert, come across that way, then back that way.
Yeah,
whereas back then they'd
out and out.
Just go and meet him on the ball, and for God's sake.
So you like your Beckhams or your Ronaldos. Beckham was totally different. Ronaldo would go left foot, right foot, but he was quick. He was direct. Joe Cole was both footed, left or right foot. Sean Wright Phillips, right foot. Iron Robin would come inside on his left foot. So you knew whoever's coming up against.
You've got a different game every
different
game.
Different game. Yeah. Beckham he wouldn't beat you. No. He would stay wide, ball out of his feet, whip it in. Straight away for crosses like into Van Nistelrooy, Andy Cole, Dwight York's like, thank you very much. Go on.
What you got to do with that then? Have you got to try and stop him crossing? Have you got to get out too early, or you'd sit
it's
off
just
and
just gauging your
come
distances,
in?
Yeah. If you go out too early, you were worried about the runners of Paul Scholes in them gaps, like your Steven Gerrard's. He's like, you were always worried about them midfield runners. When you looked at Lampard, Scholes, Gerrard, you couldn't go wide straight away too early, because now you're exposing that gap of them midfield runners. So you knew you had to wait for that right moment to when that ball was switching. Now you were going. But that run, because you were so worried about the gap of the runners, your distances wise were sort of like a little bit off a little bit.
Yeah.
So you knew you had to gauge it at the right time. But then you knew you gauged if you were going, your left side centre half was coming across.
Yeah.
And you were covering them gaps. That's what you're hoping, is that player that you played with was making sure that when you went, we all went as a team.
Yeah.
But Premiership, sometimes that's impossible.
That's endless.
That split second, because of the quality, the pace, the power, it's like they're gone.
Mm.
They're gone.
Yeah. So out of all your games, just going back slightly, how did you avoid injury? Because you them amount of games, you must have been...
Well, I got no ACL on my right knee.
That was the...
That was the one really that obviously I failed.
Still with all those games as well.
I failed a couple of medicals with that. Sunderland and Wigan... Obviously, Sunderland knew, they didn't know about my knee. I didn't know about my knee, but no idea. So when I went for my medical at Sunderland, they made a big thing of it. And yeah, I think that was probably my lowest point of my career was that one, the Sunderland medical, because it was my wife's 30th. I'd planned a weekend away in Rome. I got the phone call on the Thursday to go to Sunderland for my medical. West Brom had agreed a fee. In the regions of something like 2.5 million, rising to 3 million, that was. So went all the way up to Sunderland on the Friday, had my medical done, flew to Rome Friday afternoon with my wife, landed in Rome Friday afternoon, got a phone call, you got to come back to Sunderland. I was like, no, what are you talking about? Like, there's something come up on your medical. I was like, what do you mean? So you think, nothing wrong with me, like, I've not missed any games.
You didn't even feel anything? Nothing.
I remember when I was at Watford, I remember going for a header, and I remember landing awkwardly, and I felt a twinge in my knee, but nothing. Didn't think anything of it. Just carried on, played the game. But then obviously when you do your research, you can be born with no ACLs as well. It's like a it's weird. But did I think it might have gone then when I went for that header? I don't know. I honestly don't know, because my knee ballooned, didn't balloon. Like a lot of players that I know that have had an ACL, is that they've tried to play on their knees. Yeah, got unstable and their knees ballooned. So I got on with that. But then obviously the Sunderland scenario was, it was a shambles the way it was handled. I had to fly back from Rome. Obviously your wife's then crying all the way on the plane back to, we had to fly back to Sunderland to go for a second medical. So I had to, on the Saturday morning then, when we arrived back Friday evening, we had to go to this place where, I don't know, it was about a 40-minute drive from the hotel. I don't know where it was, because my mind now was just a blur, because I was not understanding what was going on. No one was speaking to me from their side. Obviously, the medical staff was keeping everything in-house. Seeing this specialist, who was a specialist with rugby players, which obviously they can cope with ACL injuries because they strap it, and obviously the power that they have, it's quite the norm for them. So he did all these knee tests with me, and I was like, look, can you actually explain to me what the issue is? Because no one's explained to me. We've been in Rome. You've dragged me all the way back here, and I haven't, no one spoke to me about anything with what's going on. So he just said, oh, well, you've got something wrong with your knee. We're not quite sure. He said, but I'm feeling your knee and there's nothing. Like, there's no issues with it. And I was like, I don't understand it. I need you to tell me what's going on with my knee. He said, oh, I'll leave that to the physio. So I come out of this room. He's done all the tests. Like, knee felt fine, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, physios drove us back to the hotel quiet the whole way. Not said nothing. So not said
still
nothing.
Nothing.
Still nothing, this physio. So I'm thinking, wife's still crying her eyes out in the taxi now, because we're having to go back to Sunderland and wait even more. Got back to the hotel all night. Roy Keane was the manager at the time. Roy, I never even met Roy. Roy was back in Ireland doing his badges, so he never even come over. And then he phoned me later on in the evening, and he just said, look, unfortunately, Paul, we're not going to go ahead with the signing of you. And I was like, can you please explain to me why? Well, my physio's basically told me that you've got a knee problem and your knee's going to explode in 2 years. So like from a insurance wise, we can't insure you. And I was like,
bloody hell.
You what? So yeah. So you can now imagine my mind now. It's like, I have no idea what's going on.
Mm.
So obviously Tony Mowbray was the West Brom manager at the time. Explained the situation to him.
How far into your tenure was you at the West Brom?
That was 2000, and that was the year after we missed out on the playoffs. So what was that? 5-6? Might be 6-7.
I'm just trying to work out the numbers that you've done after.
Yeah, it might
be. Your knee didn't go.
It might have been that. Yeah, might.
Was you mindful then, though, after the playing, thinking my knee might go?
So did Mowbray and West Brom, did they get the report from Sunderland then, or did they just keep all that to themselves? And
no, they had to send the report back to West Brom, because they had to show them all what was going on. But I had all my medicals done at West Brom when I first signed from Watford, and nothing showed up.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's a West Brom physio then, like.
They knew that there was no problems.
Yeah.
Which was strange. But then obviously, then when I got found out that that wasn't going through, Steve Brewsting was the Wigan manager at the time, and he called me and he said, we want to sign you. So I went straight from Sunderland to have a medical at Wigan, and they knew everything now about my knee. So they knew my knee was fine. They knew that I'd had no injuries, blah, blah, blah. Failed me on my back.
Oh, what?
So that was me. My head had gone now. My head had gone. So I just called off everything. I just called off everything.
And you didn't know you had a back problem either?
No, the back problem was just a cover-up, because they basically didn't want to insure my knee either. That's what they were basically doing.
The thing is, though, for considering at that time as well, the money involved with the Premier League clubs. Yeah. Like Peter Unlove down here, we signed him on a pay-as-you-play because of his injury problems. He ended up playing over many hundred games.
Yeah.
But was that not a thing then, even suggested?
No, because the money was a big problem. Like they say, the big fees that they wanted to pay.
Yeah.
Wigan had agreed the same fee as what Sunderland had. So it was the same 2.5 going on to 3 million. And they obviously then made an excuse of going, right, we know that there's possibly an issue with his knee, but we might struggle to get insurance, so we're going to have to say something different. So, yeah, so I failed on my back, yeah.
Wow.
But every player that will go for a medical, it will show wear and tear on your body because of how intense the game is.
Yeah,
awesome. So I just said, nah, like, I'm staying at West Brom. Like, you've messed me around. I'm, like, for West Brom, obviously, they're losing out on possibly getting that money, but at the end of the day, it was my career. And I wanted to get my head down and I wanted to get back playing football with West Brom. And that was the way it ended, was is that then I stayed there until I signed for Bolton in 2010. So, yeah, but it was a mess. While they were all faffing around with these medicals and obviously with what was going on, I then went and had a force placed test done in London, which is to test the strength of your knee.
Right.
And everything. My right leg was stronger than my left, and I'm left footed. And so it just proves the point is that.
And your knee's never exploded.
My knee's never exploded, no, and I've never had touch wood. Is that wood?
Laminate.
Let me find a bit of wood.
Touch wood effect laminate.
There we go. Bit of wood. So I'll touch that.
But yes, you never.
No.
Rusty career than not even a twinge.
But that's the hardest thing is people working in football have them opinions on something that for you as a player, it's like you don't realise how much of an effect that will have on that player now telling them that. So when he broke me that news, it was like, what are you talking about? I've no issues. Because even when I went to see the specialist, the guy was like going, where's your scar? I was like, but I still hadn't been told what my problem was. So he was going, where's your scar? I can't see a scar.
So they're trying to say that you're not telling, you're not disclosing.
They were trying to say that I was covering. I said,
no way.
That injury's like at least that's a 9-month injury to 12 months, depending on how bad the knee is.
Oh, so still think you're having a massive. No, he has. He's definitely had it done. Where's your scar?
Yeah, where's your scar? And that's what baffled me, because they still hadn't explained that, but yet they were worried about, like, he was looking for a scar. Even when he was doing my knee, he was looking for, like, keyhole, the scars. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
So at what point has someone told you the specifics of what they thought it was in?
Roy King, when he called me.
That was the only time?
That was the only time. Physio didn't, like, yeah.
Why?
Yeah, hopeless. Hopeless, yeah. So, yeah. So my mind was all over the place at the time, because you're then thinking of, oh, I've got 2 years.
Yeah.
But my knee's going to explode. Or
yeah. I've got mindful no ACL. When you're playing. Yeah.
So I've got no ACL. It's like, what's going to happen?
Is that in the back of your mind when you're playing then?
Not when I had the force plate test done, because that was off season. So I had that before I went back for pre-season with West Brom.
Yeah.
Tony Mowbray gave me an extra week to get my head right, because he knew what I'd been through. And he was like, Robbo, he's like, just take an extra week, because I know you've been up and down the country. You've not actually had a break. So you need to switch off with your family for a bit now. And then when you come back in, make sure you're ready. Mm-hmm. And then when I just hit the ground running, I was like, nothing wrong with me.
Is that what's that not mentally?
Yeah, mentally. Yeah, I was all over the place, yeah. Yeah. That was the first time I probably hit the drink again from my Watford days properly, in the sense of is that I needed something to take my mind away from what's going on. Yeah.
From like that adulation then to...
Yeah. Obviously, you were deflated because you just lost in the playoff final. Yeah. So you had all that. Then you've had 2 failed medicals. You've had all that, like, your wife looking for houses as well within that period of where you're going to go. Kids schooling as well. You're looking for kids schooling. And then, obviously, it's like, oh, I'm staying. Like, and, oh, what? Just get, I just didn't get my head down and get on with it.
Bloody hell.
So, yeah.
That's mental.
That's never easy for a professional football player.
No, fans don't see this, do they?
No.
Just to roll back then, happier times at West Brom with the Great Escape. Mm. So your first Great Escape.
Yes. Yeah.
This is one that broke you into being a Great Escape specialist. What do you remember of that season? Obviously down bottom at Christmas, yes. Everyone's ripped you off.
Yeah. It was a roller coaster season for us. Obviously the Premier League can do that to you as a group of players. We couldn't find a win. We was on a bad run under Gary. No fault of Gary. It was the players. For me, you players, you have to look at yourselves when you go into a game. You're the one that's been given all the tactical advice. You're the one that's got to deliver the message on the football pitch, and we wasn't doing that. Confidence then hit, because obviously as a player, your confidence hits low. So obviously then Gary ended up losing his job. And
got it in the neck quite badly from the fans.
Yeah, he got it bad. Yeah,
I remember that.
And he'd done an amazing job at the club. It was hard to see it.
Yeah.
But some fans obviously would relate to Gary with what he'd done, but some fans would not relate to the way that he was and how he would conduct himself. That was the difference between some of the fans. But in my eyes as a player, he developed me and made me the player as well with all the other managers, the way that I wanted to play the game. And then obviously then Brian Robson came in and it was like, wow, like he just walked through the door and it was just that aura off him that you could just see the presence, and Nigel Pearson next to him, and obviously Craig Shakespeare was in the background at West Brom at the time anyway. So we had a good group of coaches there who obviously goalkeeping coach was Joe Corrigan as well. Brilliant. Legend. So the characters in the staff now had gone to that next level of, like, we can't be below standards now, because we know what's coming. And Brian expected the Man United standards, and that's what he brought like players like Kevin Campbell in, who understood the Premier League, and he was a great leader wherever he went. Steve Watson was another great character, so he came in. Obviously the young lads like Richard Chaplow, Kieran Richardson, they all added to the quality of the squad. Yeah, and we just we kicked on. We had a nice little trip to America, which was
we've heard a little bit about that.
Again,
it's unorthodox.
Yes, I think the reasonings behind it was to get away from all the negativity. Obviously, the other side of the world is the best place to go, because if you go to Portugal, you go to Spain, you know that there's still that possibility of fans will find out where you're at. Cameras, photos, yeah, this is what they're doing, this is how they're doing it. Whereas you go to America, it's like no one knows who you are.
Yeah.
Everyone could switch off. And it was just, it brought the best out of all of us. We all got to know each other individually. We got to know each other as a group of players. The staff, did days where we'd have bonding sessions, and we just all clicked. But then as soon as we got off that plane, it was like, right, we're back in mode now of, we need to survive. Like, this is where we're at now. It's either do or die. You need to roll your sleeves up. So, yeah, I didn't play for the first 10 games under Brian, because obviously Neil Clement then come back into the fold. So, again, for me, it was about, I need to get my head down. I need to work. But I want to learn off someone like Brian. And I want to develop off Nigel Pearson, who I knew, again, was a solid defender. Learned off him in training, his levels, his expectations of what it was for defenders. Yeah, I'm like, when I get my chance now, I'm ready. And I got that chance, yeah, at Christmas away at Man City, of all the places. And we went there and we got a 1-1, and we were down to 10 men. And it was like that turning point was, wow, like we can go and do this now. Yeah, and we just went from strength to strength. And it was, yeah, going into that last week, there was a great buzz around the place, and you knew that we just needed to get our job done. Obviously, you're relying on other teams to do the business. But we know that that's never going to happen.
That was a mad ending.
So yeah, so it was a real. We knew that Fulham were beating Norwich, and it was Crystal Palace and Charlton at the time that we needed that result to sort of be a draw, and we would be safe. We got our job done against Portsmouth. We beat Portsmouth 2-0.
So I got comfortable in the
end. Yeah, comfortable in the end. And obviously you had the Portsmouth fans. They were all wearing West Brom shirts because they wanted Southampton to go down.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So it was a great atmosphere.
Did Jeff say that Brian Hughes scored for Charlton, and who's someone scored for Palace that was down here as well?
Johnson. Andy Johnson.
Andy Johnson.
Yeah, Andy Johnson scored, yeah. So it was crazy.
Yeah.
But it was just an unbelievable feeling. You get to sort of... Our game had finished, but their game was still going on. They'd gone into added time, so we still didn't know what was going on. Obviously, you could feel the tension in the crowd as the game, like our game was at the Hawthorns. It was like you could... It
I remember seeing
quiet.
The images of people
smartphones. Yeah, well. So it was the radio.
We were winning 2-0, but we knew that Palace were winning 2-1.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh my God, like it's not going our way. We're going to go down. And then all of a sudden, this roar went up. And we were like, oh my God, Charlton have equalised. It was. And then the final whistle went, and that was it. Yeah, the fans on the pitch, and yeah, the lads all celebrating. It was a great day. It was a great day. But I always look at it, it's like, I hate celebrating after just surviving. For me, it's like, should never be in their positions. I look at the players that I was with in the dressing room, and we've got too much quality to be in them positions. And it was a fantastic achievement for the club, but on a personal level, I hated it. I wanted to be a winner. I wanted to finish high in the league, and I wanted to do well. There was a lot of emotions again. That one was, brought up a lot of, obviously with what I'd gone through with West Brom with years before, the 2003, the promotion, to just surviving and things like that. It was that relief of going, we got all that hard work to get there. It's like we've just survived by the skin of our teeth, and I don't want to be in that situation. I wanted to like stay there for years to come with West Brom.
To be fair, Richie Welling, just he had an interview for Lightning,
I've seen that,
saying pretty much the same thing. you're not celebrating staying up. Get out, get yourselves gone, get changed. Nothing to be proud of. But in regards to then, so your first promotion playoffs, Watford, I just want to take you back because obviously doing research, that was our first playoff. The heartbreaker losing to Watford. So you played the first leg, didn't you?
Yes, got two yellow cards, got sent off.
So you didn't, yeah. So you didn't get to see the.
I was in the stand. I was kind of sat in the Watford end with the Watford fans. Unreal.
I've never asked anyone how that felt from the other side because that for us was absolutely heartbreaking.
I mean, the experience from like, but the atmosphere, like when you come to St Andrews and it's like that, it's like, oh my God, you like this place is ferocious. You have got to go there and you've got to silence them fans. That was what Graham Taylor's messages were all week were, look, we need to go there. We need to silence the fans because when them fans get behind them players go to that next level. It's going to be hard to nullify it then. Obviously, when you're there and you're like, I get goosebumps now talking about it because you're sitting here in this stadium when it's rocking. Yeah. Phew, what a feeling. Yeah, it's a feeling. For an away player to go there as well, it's like that buzz when the subs and they're like, ooh, it's like, yeah, it's brilliant. I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. I just laughed to myself when they used to do it. But then you experience it firsthand when you're then as a player for Blues, you get it. And let's go.
Yeah.
We have to lift the fans. We've got to get them behind us. We know if we get the fans behind us, that like all the away fans, they're gone. They're mentally gone because of the atmosphere. So that night was electric. And obviously losing on penalties, it's tough to take. But yeah, from Watford's point of view, it was a well earned, hard fought couple of legs because the first leg was tight.
Yeah.
It was a real tight affair. And then coming to St Andrews and knowing that you've obviously Alec Chamberlain in goal pulling the saves off. Was it Matt Holland? Yeah. Missed the last one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just deflating. It's horrible. It's a horrible way of losing. Chris Holland. It's a horrible way of losing. Like a playoff is the penalties. Even in the final, when you watch like the games later on in life with the Sunderlands with Mickey Gray losing like to Sunderland, it's like it's the worst feeling. It is the worst feeling, and
he still talks about it to his dad, isn't he? Sunderland still gets some powers for it, and he's still in the
arms. Because that no one will ever let him get away with that now. And it's like no matter what he did the year before they got promoted, you'll always be remembered for missing that penalty in the playoff final.
So on that as well, kind of a tenuous link with football fans are like that, aren't they?
Mm.
So how did you find it, just jumping forward a little bit then? Coming here, did you have any blowback or did it take a while to settle in? After I know Damian Johnson, after the injury, said there was no bones about it, was he was fine with it.
Yeah.
But did you feel like you had to kind of win the fans over?
Yeah, I wanted to win the fans over.
And being from West Brom as well.
Yeah, West Brom, I think, like you say, that local rivalry, even though it wasn't a local, it was a nice rivalry.
Yeah.
But for me, it was about, I was signing for a big club. Birmingham's a big club in my eyes, no matter what anyone says, it's a big, big club. And I knew that I had to go in there and just, like you say, get up and running. I wanted to show the fans what I was all about for them now, what I've previously done for opposition teams come in here and they'd seen me play. It was like,
So for Watford, you were a hero. You were kind of like an anti-hero for other fans. And I think you embraced that a little bit, whereas you were a hero for Watford, other fans didn't like you.
Yeah.
West Brom, you were the same. Blues, you were the same. But I think what won you over, particularly for us and probably the West Brom and stuff like that, is just your work ethic. And we spoke about this in previous podcasts. You just come on, you give it everything.
Mm.
And in no short time, you're kind of like, we like him. He's here for the...
You're in that column of bars, aren't you, that you hate them against you.
Yeah.
Because they're so hard, they're so no-nonsense. But to have you on the team then...
Yeah.
So thank God he's on our team and not the other team.
Yeah.
You kind of fall into that category, don't you?
Yeah, I used to get that from a lot of fans. It was like, we hated you when you played the Exes, but we'd love to have signed you. That's what you'd get. But when I first signed for Blues, I knew the issues. I knew the problems that would occur. And I just had to deal with it face on. It's like, it's football, these things happen. And there was no maliciousness to Damien whatsoever. And down the line, like obviously where I've seen him coaching at Blackburn and we've like you say, we've had a good chat and we've talked about the good old times. It's football. Yeah. And he was the same player. He was a winner. He wanted to get stuck in and it was just one of those unfortunate things on the football pitch. But when I came here, it was like,
so just on that. So you signed. We had two fit defenders.
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
So you've come in on an emergency loan.
Lee Clark, phoned me. He was like, because I had a chat with Lee in the summer as well. So it was weird because obviously he couldn't do anything. The financial side of it, obviously with the club, not knowing like what the wages were. And he just sort of said, look, Robbo, I have got a load of defenders at the time. and you might struggle to get in the team. And I said, okay, well, I'm prepared to come and fight for my place. It was like, I wanted to come to Birmingham. I wanted to sign for the club. And he just said, I just can't do it at this moment in time. So it was fine. It was fine. But yeah, then obviously the injury crisis happens and your phone rings.
Yeah, me like, again.
All right, Robbo, and his Geordie accent. And he's like, all right, hello, like, he's Clarkie. I was like, all right, Lee, how are you, mate? He goes, I need you to come to Wast Hills and to the training ground. I need to have a look at you. And I was like, what's going on here? He said, oh, we've had a real, like a bad injury crisis at the back and I'm struggling for defenders and obviously transfer window shuts. So he's got to look at free transfers to like fill the void for now. And so nothing was agreed with my contract. It was just go down and train and have a look at you for a couple of days. And yeah, literally within that couple of days, it was like, well, we want to get you on a month's contract.
Get you in straight away.
Yeah, so it was like, it was for me then, it was like, let's go. I just got to hit the ground running.
Longest month ever.
Yeah, well, God. You get to the end of the month, you're like, am I getting another month? I used to be knocking on his door.
Did you actually used to go in month by month and be
month
like...
Month by month, it was like, well, he'd pull you and he'd just go, yeah, got another month, Robbo, it's all right, like that. And but yeah, you would have to knock on the door and you go, Gaffer, another month for? And he'd be like, not sure yet, got to wait. It was here. You just know, yeah. But the thing is, you'd smile about it because Lee knew my mentality. He knew no matter what, I would just get on with it and I would just try and do my job as best as possible. He said it wouldn't affect me. And that was the relationship that we had. And it was great because I wanted to repay him for what he did for me. He got me back in football. So I wanted to come in and I wanted to help Lee Clark as much as possible. And that was the great thing about it.
How long was he here?
While
you signed that? Well, when did you get the longer contract?
And then it was... So I got a year after that. So in the end, it was, he pulled me in. Obviously, we'd had the end of season, got to the end of the season, and then Lee would have his meetings with all the players about whether they were staying or whether they were going. And obviously, you would come in one by one. So I came in and obviously I sat down on the desk and he just looked at me and he just smiled. He went, you've got another year, Robbo. And I was like, we're buzzing. We just hug each other. And I was like, brilliant. Nice one, Gaffer. Like that. And then that year, obviously, then he named me captain because Steve Caldwell had left and he'd gone to Toronto. He signed for Toronto. So, yeah, it was the perfect start to what was going to be a fantastic year. I thought, yeah, it was amazing to be, named as the captain for this club. Obviously, it's a great honour and I loved every minute of it.
Did you know Lee from before playing days?
Playing against him, yeah. So I played against him when he was at Fulham, Newcastle, yeah.
He's a great
player. He's not that much older.
No, Lee, was he mid-50s? Yeah, so yeah, I'd have played against him when he was in his prime. What a midfield player Lee was, yeah. And you could see it in his lad as well, Bobby, when he was here in the academy, Bobby.
Yeah.
Where you could see exactly the same sort of qualities of player. And he's, like you say, he's gone on, where is he now? Because he was on loan at Derby, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Not sure. Yeah, he didn't really get a chance, did I?
No, he was at Liverpool, wasn't he? Done really well for Liverpool and obviously he went and signed for Red Bull.
Yeah.
Because the assistant went there, Pep. Yes. Linders went there and then he signed him. And then he's obviously gone to Derby on loan and he's had a good season and they just missed out on the playoffs, unfortunately. So runs in the family, good players.
Brilliant.
So that period then, Dan Air.
Yeah. Let's talk about that period. Yeah, it was...
So being club captain, team captain, did you feel like... You said you thought, that was going to be a good season for us. How did that play out then for you? What were your memories of that season?
It was tough. Yeah, it was tough because we got a good group of, loan players in to start with. So, like, your Jesse Lingards, your Dan Burns. Also, gelling with your Damari Greys and your Nathan Redmonds and players like that was... it was a real good. Revel Morrison came in, who was another player who was on that next level.
Yeah.
And you felt it, something special was going to happen here with it. And then obviously it all got broken up in January. And then we went on a terrible run. We couldn't win a game at home. And then obviously Lee ended up losing his job after the Bournemouth game, before the Bournemouth one, it was the week before. He lost his job and then we ended up going to the Bournemouth game. And I mean, it was just horrendous. Absolutely horrendous, that feeling. And then that's when Gary Rowett came in. And obviously Gary Rowett changed it. He stabilised us. He brought a little bit of stability back to the team. He brought a little bit of a togetherness again because there was a few divides. Obviously the confidence again was low with losing games. Your Clayton Donaldson's. We had good players, David Cottrell's. Real good group of lads, but they just needed guidance. And Gary then brought that back, knowing what was going on off the field. It was it was a real sort of like, again, of getting ourselves back on our feet. But it was a tough season again, like from the start to then the ending. It was one of those, that survival period again of, yeah, not knowing. And then obviously like the survival from the Bolton situation, you didn't never want that to happen again. It was like, my God, what is going on here? Like, I just can't keep going through this because I'm losing my head going through it all the time, these survival battles. And it was like the club, obviously financially, no one really knew what was going on because it was, you never knew who you were speaking to or what was going, like people around the place, you never knew who to talk to. It was just a mess. It was a mess. And yeah, I mean,
we were in such a precarious position there, yeah. Whether the club was just going to go and
yeah. Just... And that's what I thought. But the Bolton game, for me, I thought it was do or die. If we lose and we get relegated, I believe that the club would just go into the abyss,
yeah.
And it would be the hard to come back from that. That's the way I felt in the building,
yeah.
Of what was going on. You could sense it from the outside as well with the fans and the pressure,
oh,
putting all of that on top of the players. We had a young group, so it was like trying to manage the players, not only manage myself, but manage the group of players as well. And you got to give credit to the players because these young kids, they would have never experienced something like that. That for them now, that's a life skill. That's something that they've had to experience and go through for now and later on in life will make them stronger with what, yeah, they've had to deal with. And I think obviously Lee created like a montage of the going into the game of like the family speaking, and he got us in a room and we just bawled our eyes out. This was before the game. And you're like thinking, oh my God, like I'm watching a video and my family's all been filmed. We had no idea what was going on, but it was like they're motivational. If you can't take motivation from seeing that, but now you're emotionally, that added pressure of going into that game of trying to perform and get it. And then when you go 2-0 down, you're like, oh my God, it's like, where do we go? Where do we go from here? But it was always trying to be positive, trying to keep the lads on their toes, trying to like keep
again,
them going.
Again, was it you who was...
Yeah, and I think everyone as well. Like you still had like your Chris Burks, you had your Hayden Mullins that were there as well. Your senior players, they were all driving it. That's not as hard from it wasn't just me; it was them as well. They were trying to drive the standards, and obviously Ziggy, like good lads who wanted to do well. You had your young lads who understand what the club means to them. They're trying to push themselves through that brick wall of going, we need to get back in this. And then when you get that one goal back. And then when the second goal goes in, it's like that relief and you're like, oh my God. And then you see the celebrations, the fans, you see Clarkey running down the touchline into the crowd. It's like for him, that pressure of knowing what he's had to deal with financially. But again, like for the fans, like celebrating with the fans, it meant a lot to him. And you could see it even when he was by himself, that week he distanced himself. I know I'd spoke about it in other podcasts. He distanced himself. You could see he wasn't himself because he was holding a lot of stuff back from the players that he didn't want them to know.
That he was getting from above.
Yeah, of course he would have been. But also, it's like you say, it's that pressure for a manager. It's like that thought of not knowing where this club's going to be if we get relegated. Everyone looks at him because he's the manager. And you could just see the relief in his eyes and how he felt. And yeah, it was just a lot of mixed emotions. To get the job done and to know that we were secure again.
Yeah, I imagine it's lonely.
But that's the I think the isolated I felt from that of taking myself away of going, I need to just switch off from my family now because that pressure has gone to the next level of what I've ever experienced before as a captain and as a footballer as well. That was intense.
Yeah.
Well, it is. We luckily when Jeremy Dow said when he came in, we were 3 months away from the wall, and that was with Knighthead and the situation we were in there. If we'd have gone then,
yeah,
it's done, isn't it? It's,
and that's like you say, fans never knew, but when until Jeremy comes out, and that's what clubs need to understand is that if you're relaying their messages back to the fans, then the fans appreciate that a little bit more. But there was no messages coming, not even to the players, so the fans weren't getting messages because they didn't know what was going on. We weren't getting messages as players because we never knew where we were where we stood as players. And it was just a whole, like, again, a car crash situation where you're thinking, what is going on at this football club?
So which one do you think is the most impressive feat out of the West Brom and Blues Great Escapes?
Fourth. God, it's a tight one. Yeah, I think the West Brom one with being bottom at Christmas. And the magnitude of it with, like you say, Premier League football and... Yeah, I mean, the Birmingham one is just... inches close to it. It is because of the differences in knowing of where the club would have been from a Birmingham situation. Yeah, it's a But I would just say the West Brom one edges it. Just did the.
I don't think it's been done since, has it?
No, it's not been done since. No, no.
But yeah, it's like a roller coaster. It's like a roller coaster speaking to.
But they definitely make you stronger, a stronger person. Which is, I've got thick skin as a person anyway. But yeah, it definitely challenges as a human being them situations.
Yeah.
So that Bolton game, you'd just come back, hadn't you?
Yes, I got a 3-game suspension for 15 yellow cards. Yeah, but the Forest one was a joke. I mean, I'd say it like
they didn't mind a yellow.
I didn't know, but what I'd say was, is the referees, they'd already marked my card because they knew what type of player I was, and they do it with other players now. When you see it, they've always got their eye on a player straight away. Their first tackle, it's like a yellow card, and you look at it and you just go, just let the game flow for a bit. If he does the next one, then obviously, yeah, that is a yellow card. But it was straight away. And then you think, oh, my God, now I'm treading on eggshells. I've got to be, like, really careful now. And it was, yeah, I mean, the disappointing thing was is that the way the referee had done it, he knew straight away. And I knew what he was going to do. And I just thought, you've done this on purpose. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've done this on purpose.
Have you had that your whole career then?
Yeah, I would know the certain referees. As soon as I was walking down the tunnel, the referees would look at you and go, be a good boy today, Robbo. And you'd be like, ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, here we go.
Put your name in. I'll put your name in now, yeah. Kind of thing.
I mean, there was a prime example of a Man United, West Brom playing Man United. I've gone for a 50-50 with Park Ji-sung, and we've both slid in, and we've both got the ball, and the refs give me a straight red because Sir Alex Ferguson's in the fourth official's ear. But they're the things you look at, and you go, what are you seeing there? Because... And then it gets rescinded. It's like my Birmingham Wolves one when I got sent off for that rabbit punch that they said that I did. But the commentator's giving it the old Andy Hinchcliffe saying, oh, Robbo's rabbit punched him there. And it's like, no, we haven't. If you like, actually, if you zoom in and if there was VAR back then, they would have slowed it down and they'd have seen, I'd have just pushed him off me. But then that one gets rescinded. But that could have cost us points because we could have lost that game. We luckily won the game 2-1.
Mm.
But a different game, that could have changed and we could have lost it.
Yeah.
But them little things you look at and you go, yeah, they're the ones where you look out for them type of players and they'll go, yeah, I've got his card straight away. I know what I'm going to do with him.
That's as you're walking out, you go, Robbo, be a good boy.
I'm never going to change my game. I played on the edge. I was a winner. I wanted to get stuck in.
If you get a yellow early doors, it changes your game.
Yeah, of course it does. But I always played on the edge anyway.
Yeah,
as a player, I was always that type of person that if there was a ball that was 50-50, I was going for it. I wasn't pulling out. If I got hurt, so be it. I got hurt. That was the way it was. That was football.
You think that's why fans love you as a player for their club so much? Because even just listening to you talk about it, like, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I think fans love me because they would get a buzz from it of knowing that he's fully committed, he understands. But I also was a good footballer.
That was going to be my question because we have that quite a lot. One of the questions that we're asking here is... A lot of the players that we have come in, like yourself, that wore your heart on your sleeve. But at the same time, there's no real recognition of your actual technical ability as a footballer.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got under 21 England caps.
Yeah.
You've played at the highest level. You've played Premier League football for a large period of your actual career.
Yeah.
That's more than just being willing to do the dirty.
Yeah, I knew I could play football. And my game evolved. And I knew I was a good footballer. But it was obviously, people never saw that. People just saw that he just likes to tackle. He likes getting stuck in. But that team, that West Brom team, when we played football, it was... Everyone talks about, the game, the way it's played and that now. It's like, no, you go back and watch it back then, that era as well. The game was played. Played football. Teams play football. Good football. That was probably my best footballing period was at West Brom, where I played my best football as an individual. Yeah, I really enjoy
it. And is that with having license to come forward and wing back rather than
assists,
batting down the ashes?
Yeah, assists and goals. Yeah, just I played with freedom. Yeah, I played with freedom.
We've missed the goal you scored against Villa, didn't we?
Against Villa, the header.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're back here.
Yeah.
Goal of the season as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, goal of the season. I think that was just because it was against Villa. I couldn't class a header as a goal of the season. But yeah, it was just one of those moments where... Last 9 minutes of the game, we need an equaliser, and I can hear Brian Robson shouting at me, Robbo, go on, get forward. And I've got Jeff Horsfield going, go on, chipmunk. He's shouting, I'm like, look, go on, Horse, like, Jesus. So I'm running, like, obviously, I can see the build up on the right hand side with Ricardo Shimica and Zoltan Gera. Lovely little link up. And then I'm thinking, ball's coming in here. Like, I think it was Lee Endre on the back post, and he had no idea where I was at, or Mark Delaney. It was one of them. It was one of them two. And they were both facing the ball. And it's my pet hate, because I teach my defenders to open their shoulders up when they're defending the back post and making sure that you know where your attacker is when that ball's coming in. And they didn't have a clue where I was. And I can see the cross coming in, and I could see the flight of it. And I'm thinking, oh, it's coming my way. So my first thought was, is just keep your eyes open and make sure you got that contact with the ball perfect on the flush of your forehead. And it just landed perfect. I mean, there was a little flick from the front post off one of the Aston Villa defenders. And then I've just put it in the net. And yeah, the joy. But the best thing about it was, is that when we got back on the coach, the table come up on the coach, and at that point took us out the bottom three. So it's the first time we've been out the bottom three all season. And it was just the coach erupted. Like, we were like, all like, yeah, like that. And we're thinking, oh, we've got to go Man United next week. And we're like, calm down, lads. Like, yeah, we'll enjoy this moment. Yeah, we'll enjoy this moment where we can just look at the table and look, we're out of it now. We're at the bottom three, but we still got to go Man U next week. And that was the highs. And then that was the lows of coming back down, of knowing that you had to go to Old Trafford. But we went there and got a point as well. And it was brilliant. I mean, yeah, the last few games leading into the Portsmouth game was that's when we knew as a group that we'd destroyed a few of the other team's mentality and like their confidence, because we'd sucker punched them in getting out of the bottom three. So they were a little bit deflated going into their games.
Yeah, it's like Wolves this season. It's like fascinating, the mentality of a team that's cut adrift or seemingly cut adrift. Yeah. The carefree way they can then play, disrupt others, but then you can see actually the trapdoor might be open.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the mentality then. So how do you go from kind of, right, to let's not get back in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've got nothing to lose, just go for it.
And I think the main thing for, like, when you look at teams like Wolves this year is that they've had no chance of getting out of it. So for them, it was Rob Edwards just needed to go in there and stabilise his club, because he is his club, and I think he's done a fantastic job of how he stabilised it. And then now they're building for next season, now their championship. So, yeah, we knew, though, that we always had the outside chance because it was close. It was always close. There was never that big gap.
It was never a drift. Yeah.
Yeah. So we knew that if we went on this run of games where we could pick up nice points and good wins, we knew we had an outside chance of, yeah, we're closing the gap now on other teams. And then other teams, mentally-wise, they're looking at it going, oh, West Brom's coming, by the way. We need to start picking points up. And it is. Football's all about mindsets. Like, it's a mind game. So as soon as you start going on that run, like run of losses, and then you can see West Brom's coming, it's like, oh no, like, we can't afford to lose the next game. And then we win it, they're like, whoa, here we go, lads, they've gone now. We've got the better of these now as well. So yeah, so as a lot of the games, it's all about the mindset.
Mm-hmm. That's class.
I remember seeing footage of you, the blonde hair, you and Kevin Phillips. Yeah.
That was a drinking session, that was as well. That was a barbecue. Yeah, I went around Kev's house for a barbecue, and his sister was a hairdresser at the time. So yeah, we'd had a few drinks that afternoon in his garden. It was a lovely sunny day, and we were just sitting there enjoying ourselves. And next thing, we, like, obviously Kev's sister started putting all this blonde dye in his hair, and I'm thinking, what are you doing like that? And he had no idea what was going on. So we've had to go, right, I'll do it with you then, Kev. So we've both ended it done. My head was burning, by the way. It was like roasting. Tinfoil on there as well. So obviously she knows what she's doing. She's a hairdresser. So I'm thinking, oh, she's brilliant. We're both going to have blonde hair in the morning. Mine was ginger. So I had to go into Solihull.
I remember. Yeah.
So I had to go into Solihull the next day with my wife wearing a cap.
Bit of a ginger tinge, yeah?
Yeah. We had to go and get another colour that would make my hair go white. Wow.
Sitting in the salon, as I'm walking, things on, I'm going. Yeah,
so obviously I'm not doing it in a salon. My wife's doing it, Caroline. So we've ended up going in Solihull, and I bumped into Dean Kiley, and I'm thinking, he's gone, take your cap off, you idiot, like that. And I'm like, no, Dean, I can't do it in here, mate. No, I'm not doing it. And he was like, what are you doing? I said, you want to see Kev's hair, mate? So obviously then we both come in the next day with training, and we both got blonde hair, and that was it. Then we were off. Every time we celebrated, we were like, that was a celebration of rubbing each other's heads.
Brilliant session, that,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, so we were winning, he was scoring goals, so we carried the trend on. And that's the way it carried on until he left. And I was like, thank God for that. I've let my hair go back natural now. But they were good times. They were good times. Yeah.
It's played with some players. I mean, it's weird how kind of small football is, especially around the Midlands, because that time there's quite a lot of to and fro, especially Blues and West Brom, isn't there?
Yeah.
Players coming and going. So who's the best player you've played with across your career?
There's so many. Yeah, there's so many. I would say, obviously, Jonathan Greening was, he was the complete midfield player in my eyes who I played with West Brom. The Kev Phillips then come, who was the complete striker who scored goals. So the two of them. But then when I went to Bolton, I had Jack Wiltshire, Gary Cahill, unbelievable football players. And that was a great squad of players here. But then when you're here at Blues, like John Terrell, for me, stands out as technically one of the best players I've played with on a technical level. He would just, he'd do things where you'd go, how have you done that, by the way? Then at Watford, like people forget, I forgot the players that I played with at Watford, like your Alan Nilsons, your Ramon Vate, Ronnie Rosenthal. So for me, like, Ronnie Rosenthal, when he came to like this Liverpool legend and he signed for Watford, Graham Taylor had that aura of signing these players. Incredible to play with. And I loved every minute of it. So, yeah, but I would say out of all of them, I would say Jonathan Green and Kevin Phillips are right up there with the best that I've played with.
So that's Tom as well, obviously, in a slightly different player. But Zoltan Gera was a player.
Robert Corrin as well, so underrated as a midfield player. But even like Bolton again, you go back to Bolton as well, you had like Martin Petroff, Matty Taylor, the winger as well, up front, Kevin Davis, Johan Almanda, Stuart Holden. All I've been lucky to play with top players. Yeah, I've been so lucky with the teams that I played in that we've.
Was he Cutcher before? Yeah.
Was a Cutcher. Yeah, he was there before me.
Just before.
Yeah, he was before me. Yeah.
They were some naughty players, didn't they, Bolton?
Yeah, yeah, really, really good players like your Campos. But again, Sam Allardyce was someone who, he attracted players. Yeah, he was good.
20 years ahead of his time, aren't he? Yeah. He'd be on, what would he be on now? Contract-wise, now direct football and set pieces are all of a sudden like a new thing in football.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, yeah. You think that them players now that you played against, that era was a joy to play in. Yeah, your Omri's, your Pires's, your Lundbergs who you played against, it was, they were the best. Vieira, Keane. The best, by a mile now. I'm playing against the best players.
Gerrard, that was the best era.
Lampard. Yeah, you name it. I got the opportunity to like share the pitch with them. It was like a dream come true for me. Yeah.
Was there anyone you hated playing against?
I hated playing against Paul Scholes.
Yeah.
Paul Scholes was a joke of a footballer. But not just with the ball at his feet, but he scored goals. He was nasty as well.
I was going to say, did you ever get one of these? Oh, no, he didn't mean that. That's Paul Scholes. No. He doesn't know how to tackle.
No, I'll tell you a story, actually. My wife nearly knocked him over. Like, when we was in Portugal, it was, like, hilarious. Wasn't a time for her because she had palpitations, thinking that she, like, nearly killed Paul Scholes.
Whoa,
yeah, because we was on the same development of where our Villas were. So as we were sort of, as she reversing the car going back to our Villa, he was walking past with his lad. And then the sensor's gone in the back of the car because obviously it was dark. There was no lights on the car park area. And as she's gone, who the hell was that? She's like, I nearly knocked him over. And I went, don't worry, love it. It's only one of the best midfield players in the world that you've nearly knocked over and killed. She went, who was that? I was like, Paul Scholes. She was like, oh no.
It's only England's hopes.
Yeah. But it was you like,
get thrown a dungeon.
It was
one of them
funny moments where you're Paul thinking, Scholes. Yeah. And then I'd seen in the year after on the football pitch, and we had a little chuckle about it. He said, did your missus realise she nearly knocked me over? I was like, yep. I reminded her of that. Don't worry about it. But he was a joke for footballer. Yeah. Yeah. I used to, like just from an outsider watching him play. I used to love watching him play. Yeah. Watching him as a footballer, watching him play was unreal to see what he could do on a football pitch.
Scholes, Lampard or Gerrard?
Paul Scholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Scholes. By a mile, yeah. They're all top class players, but for me, Paul Scholes had everything. Yeah, he had everything about him. Yeah.
And it's even like when they ping a corner out to him quick, weren't it? And he'd volley, and he'd always catch it clean,
yeah.
Bang at pace, and it's just in, isn't it?
Yeah, and I hate it when we compare, like you say, your Messi's and your Ronaldo's because they're totally different players. Yeah, and you're just like, who's the best player? They're both top world class players. And when you're comparing Scholes, Lampard and Gerrard, they're all different players, but they are world-class players.
You just can't put them all in the same room. No,
and we can't because they're individually, they have their own brilliance. And that's what's great about that era is that they were all individually brilliant and so hard to play against or mark. That was how good they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we touched upon it, but just kind of quick fiery kind of questions to finish off. So best atmosphere, would you say?
Oh, God, best atmosphere. I think Leeds United, going to Leeds, Elland Road, I think that's always a great atmosphere. Here, St Andrews, when it's bouncing as an opposition, and then playing when it gets going, it's like them goosebumps that you get. So yeah, so I would say they're right up there. Them ones, them atmospheres when they're bubbly and they're lively and it's electric. West Ham, the old Upton Park as well. That was oh yeah, something to like look at as well.
It's not so bad,
you,
is it?
No, all you know is how
tech. No, you go there now, it's like it's horrendous, that stadium, especially for like a team like West Ham. It's like their fans, they must be devastated that they ended up moving there. But again, it's say now it's the norm with teams with what they do in it. But you lose that tradition, don't you? As soon as you move away from your stadiums, you lose like Highbury with the Emirates, Upton Park.
Miles away from them, aren't you? Yeah, from the fans like this.
It's a little bit different with that West Ham stadium, isn't it? It's not a football stadium.
No, no. So yeah, so I would say they're the stadiums where you can feel the presence.
Yeah.
One game you'd relive.
I would definitely relive the Wembley final, Bolton Watford. Yeah, I'd love to relive that again.
I saw that over a kick,
lifting that trophy.
I saw that over a kick the other day again.
That was my first experience of playing in front of a big crowd, and then also I got my under 21s call up leading into that game. So as soon as the game finished, I went up to the England camp. Yeah, so I missed all the celebrations, but lifting that cup was just a proud moment. Obviously, my club Watford as well, coming through the system, and getting the bounce promotions as well. Because the year before we got promoted from League One, to then obviously which was the Championship, then
yeah
to the Premiership it was just an unbelievable feeling. Yeah, so I would love to relive that again.
Promotional survival. What gives you the bigger? Obviously the different
promotion. Survival for me is.
Oh, we've touched upon it, haven't we? It's more of a relief. But
survival is like for more of the outside, for the fans, the people working behind the scenes, the survival. But the promotions are the best. They're the best. They're the feelings you want. They're the ones that you want on your accolades, on your CV, is that I've won promotions. So yeah, I've been lucky enough. I've won four, so I've loved that.
Yeah.
Do you like to put that out as well, like to the
arena?
Because it's not. The thing is, you're seen as a firefighter, right? Yeah, but you're not.
Yeah, look on it profoundly of my career, of what I've achieved in the game. Is I've achieved them because of my hard work and the teams that I played in were all that. It was like a winning mentality. So yeah, so I don't promote that sort of stuff because I'm proud of it individually of what I've achieved in my career. People will look back on it because they then will see it and they'll go, oh, I didn't realise, and yeah.
That's for them to know. Revisionist, isn't it? Everything now is so instantaneous, isn't it? No one remembers anything. Yeah. The internet's made everyone anything after last week. They don't know what happened, kind of thing.
And it's funny because obviously when I go back to Watford now, the younger generation have no idea who I am or what I've done for the football club.
Right.
And I smile because it's... But this is the way football is now. It's like they don't understand the history of the football club, some of these fans. Like, you understand the history. When I played for a football club, I understood the culture and the history of the football club. That was my job, was to understand the fans, but also to understand what I needed to do to take this club to the next level. And the Watford fans, some of them have no idea who I am at times. Yeah.
To be fair, most weeks they don't know who the manager is either, do they?
Yeah, well, that's another touchy subject, that one. That is.
That's very touchy, Who's the best manager you played under? Because
I've got three. So obviously Graham Taylor, when I first came through the youth at Watford, He was my dream manager to start my pathway off. Yeah, a joy to be around, not only as a human being but also as a manager. Yeah, he was such a gentleman off the field with my development as a young kid. And he would tell me as well, which was good. He never was nice and sort of easy with me. He would let me know that if I was doing things wrong, I got told about it. I got told to make sure I pulled my line, or I was never playing for Watford Football Club again. So that was my first dealings with Graham, who I really adored and enjoyed working for. Tony Mowbray and Brian Robson were the other two at West Brom. Yeah, they were two that developed me then as a football player. Brian Robson, especially when he came in, took my game to the next level with obviously getting the recognition to try and get into the England squad, which was hard because obviously I was competing against players like Ashley Cole and Wayne Bridge, which again is like it's that era. But yeah. But they're the ones who you love competing against because that's what you wanted to go. You wanted to go head to head with them players. So I had no qualms about not getting called up because I knew that they were better players and they were playing for top clubs at the time. Yeah, and then Tony Mowbray again then went to that next level when we was at West Brom with that team that, yeah, just smashed the league in 2008. And we won the league. Yeah, it was an incredible season. And the football we played was a joy. Yeah, it was a joy to play in.
We obviously are fond of him for him. Come down here and he's like a kind of Midlands.
We only got a glimpse, didn't we, unfortunately. But his style of football and everything was such a breath of fresh air for the small period that we had to see.
And I think his philosophy, the way that he thinks is sort of like, I'm a thinker as well, sort of picked up off of the three of them, Graham Taylor, Brian and Tony. I've sort of managed all three of them to try and pick their sort of like their thinking mentality with how I...
From them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Definitely.
Yeah. So just finally then, so what's the future like? What's coaching, obviously, Oxford City? And...
Yes, yeah. So there's still a possibility for me there next season, which
you've got all your badges now.
I've got all my badges, yeah. So I've got all my pro licence. So, yeah, I've got everything that I need.
So you could get the Chelsea job because...
I don't think I'll be considered.
You never know. Get them one of them eight-year contracts, don't you? Yeah.
One day, if there's an opportunity to become a manager, I'd love the opportunity. You obviously go for jobs... not experienced enough, that's what you get told. And I think that's the hardest thing, knowing that you've done everything that you feel you deserve to be given an opportunity, but then you get told that you've not got the experience, but then you see these younger coaches now that have just come out of the game and they're getting the opportunities, but they've got no experience. So I find it hard, but I'm just keep my head down, keep doing what I'm doing. I love what I do. I love working at Oxford. I've loved it this year with helping them survive in the National League North. And yeah, they've got a great group of players, great group of staff members working in the background. I've loved my time there. So, yeah, I'm just gonna keep enjoying it. And if there's a possibility of a manager's job, it'd be hard to turn it down if you're given the opportunity. It's something that I would love to get on my CV as well and have the opportunity of doing it. If I don't do it well, at least I've had that chance and I can say, who knows? But who knows? If you're not given that chance, I'm never going to know.
Yeah. How easy was it to get into coaching? How did you find the transition?
It's hard to get into coaching, but obviously my transition was brilliant. Obviously being here, Gary Monk was the manager at the time. He saw what I was like, and I worked closely with Richard Beale with the under-21s. Yeah, and we had a real good good group of players who were involved with the first team, but also went out and got some good loan moves as well, where they went and developed as players.
Yeah.
And then obviously it all changed. It all went downhill from there for me. With my coaching, which was hard, but again it was a learning curve for me of what my playing career was all about, is that I've got to bounce back. I can't let people affect me in that way. So I've got myself back to a level of where I've coached in the Championship with Millwall, with Watford, and I've really enjoyed them times. And then I've now had to take a job in the National League North, which I don't have a problem with because I just love any level. I love developing people and helping people. But there's that bit inside of me, that burning desire that knows I'm good enough to do it at the top. And I want to be given that opportunity at some point. But who knows when that'll happen?
Well, we knew it as fans, I think. You probably agree that we
see,
knew on the
you
pitch.
You can see in players. You can see certain players.
I'd imagine the players in the changing room have probably said, if you could name one or two people, you'd be on the list to say Robbo would be good as a coach because you was doing that through your playing career.
Oh, I'd love to one day... again, look, it's... my career is not going to last forever because I'm going to have to come to one point where I want to retire and enjoy life with my family a little bit more and switch off with it. But one of my clubs that I played for, I'd love to be given the opportunity. I would love to be given the opportunity to lead them and take them as far as I can. That would be my dream job. But yeah, who knows?
Class. So finally, message to the Blues fans. So we're down here, down the Blues. For next season?
I just think keep doing what you do. I mean, you drive the team forward with your support home and away. I mean, I was inspired by the numbers that travelled. Even though we weren't going through some good times, you always spent your money and you got right behind the team. So, yeah, keep believing. Keep being positive. There's good times ahead. I see that. I believe in that. And I think the team next season, they've got to kick on and look for the Premiership. That's what they've got to do. And yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting season. But yeah, for the Blues fans, it was, I know I really appreciate your support when I was here as a player, but also as a coach. It means a lot to me. And yeah, just keep getting behind the team and keep pushing them forward.
Class. Cheers, Robert.
All right. Thank you very much, fellas.
Cheers, mate. If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So Let's convert some views into memberships, and that will continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.